This is the Stateless Man pursuing liberty beyond borders, and I just finished up that interview with Mary Jane Bennett. If you want to see that report, which is just loaded with compelling data as to why people are traveling south across the border and long distances, I'm looking at the distance between Regina, where is it? No, Winnipeg, and Grand Forks, I think. From just a cursory glance, that looks like a 6 or 7 hour drive to get to this airport. But she says people are saving about between $400 and $500 each person on a round trip. So you can see why people are doing it. And she said that it's really impeding tourism to Canada. And yeah, I see that as they must be working pretty hard up in Canada to out-tax the U.S. in terms of air traffic, but they're achieving it. And I hope your report gets some traction because, greatly I would like it to be freer and I also more readily available. And I'm glad Canadians are showing body with their feet and showing that they are willing to, utilize the better competition if it's available. Now, when Andrew commented on Twitter, if you want to follow the Twitter, the show's Twitter account is at The Stateless Man, and his Twitter account is at Yale Oss. That's YAELOSS. Is that he has done it many times. This fellow, as far as I know, was born in Quebec, Canada, but is now a U.S. citizen. And he has written an article for The Stateless Man page this week. It's just thestatelessman.com. And the article is The Fading Concept of Nationalism. And Yale Ossofsky, I noted it in my newsletter. He's an investigative reporter with Florida Watchdog. He also has his own radio show, Liberty in Exile, which discusses his examination of basically corruption in the political world and various other topics. I've been a guest on there, and I listen to his show regularly whenever it comes out. So if you want to call in, the number is 1-888-741-7472. So, Yale, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Well, Fergus, it's a pleasure to hear your voice again.
Right on. And so this article has a lot to get into. And you started off by describing how basically people receive this kind of indoctrination or education from a young age to think that they are better than others or people from other areas. And that feeds into a kind of nationalism. Do you want to expand on that point or explain the initial point?
Sure. I think the greatest prism through which I saw this through was growing up, as you said, as a native Canadian from Quebec who eventually moved to North Carolina. And I was forced to go to government school and to listen to these patriotic songs and to say the pledge and pledge an anthem to a flag. There are all these different traditions that were sort of pushed on us from an early age. And I found that very odd and peculiar. I mean, I really did not have that when I was growing up, in Quebec. But once we were in school and you're in the classroom and every single morning you have to sit there and recite the pledge, nobody ever discusses it or talks about it or what it really means. It's just sort of repeated and it's pushed on and you learn it and people memorize it and you say it from the first day in kindergarten until the day you graduate high school. I thought that was very interesting. So when you sort of asked me to pitch an article, this is one that really came to mind, is just this is the perfect way to indoctrinate people when they're young, get them hooked on the songs, get them hooked on the anthems. I remember singing songs about how America is the greatest country of the world because we defeated the British. I mean, I remember singing that when I was 6 years old. It meant nothing to me, but I was indoctrinated into the myth.
It's gosh, there's so many things to say about that, because I was going to say about those patriotic myths. One of the sad things is that now Britain may be more economically free than the United States. I'm not sure whether that's completely accurate, but some indexes have shown that. And let me think, because the Pledge of Allegiance in particular, we sing that, we say that, not, I don't say it, but I still hear it all the time. Now, I'm trying to think. I want people to know that this article is really worth your time. There's a lot in it. So it's at thestatelessman.com, and the title is The Fading Concept of Nationalism. You can also see that on the Facebook page. And Yale said that, when he came to school in the U.S., he was he received this kind of like these patriotic myths. And I'm not sure that many people would know what you mean by patriotic myth. So you referred to one about defeating the British. Do you have any others in mind?
Well, I think, you know, when you go back to the Star Spangled Banner, which is sung at every single athletic event, sports game, you know, whatever you can think of, the Star Spangled Banner is sung there. And I think this is probably the greatest thing that you can do for fostering nationalism is you create a national song. People are tearing up. And the song was, or the poem was actually originally written during the War of 1812, where, you know, you had the Americans and the British, and actually the Americans at that point invaded my home country and tried to take over Quebec, but that's a different point. But you had, right. You had sort of a, just fighting over territory and over land, and just the entire idea that the United States of America has always been right and just, and everything that it has ever done, whether it's been in the War of 1812 or the Revolutionary War or the wars since thereafter, it's all been in the name of the good guys versus the bad guys. We've always been the good guys. That's why you need to pay attention to USA, red, white, and blue, the flag, the eagle, everything that's important. And it all goes back to symbolism at the end of the day as well.
But you mentioned that you didn't think you received the same treatment in Quebec. I'm surprised to hear that. Do you want to reaffirm that, or you didn't? Because people in Quebec, I mean, this is a generalization, but they seem very kind of proud of their province.
Well, the thing is they sort of have been forced to, in that it's more a reaction to everything happening around. Now, the Quebecois, or, you know, there may be 8 million French speakers all in North America, and they're all huddled up right there in Quebec, and they've had an invasion of English culture, you know, for millennia. So that really what they're trying to do is just, it is a reaction to that, but it's not the types of myths, the types of things that we see here in the United States. You rarely see the type of, you know, singing songs, and especially the fact that people would go to war and fight for their country. I think that's one of the most important things that in Canada is very rare. We do have an armed forces, but even the French speakers in the Canadian Special Forces, a lot of them still have a lot of resentment. A lot of the French speakers were sent to fight in a lot of these British conscripted wars, such as World War I and World War II, and there's still a lot of resentment because obviously Quebec had absolutely no connection to that, but it was the English population, because of their ties to Great Britain, that therefore had some sort of contract and conscripted a lot of soldiers.
Ryan, I'll say that there's a lot of political demagoguery that goes on around Quebec too, that people want to blame Quebec for problems. It's just kind of like, they're like an easy whipping boy sometimes up in Canada. But I was going to say, regarding the pledge, though, I remember reading an article about a bunch of students who resisted saying the pledge. And I think the parents had defended the students, saying they don't have to say it. It's their choice. And you should have seen the comments below that article. People were just vicious. They wanted to basically beat these kids into submission, and how can you not say it? And, you know, there's no choice in this matter. I was going, this is worse than some crazy religion.
Well, actually, Fergus, I would tell you an interesting story. I actually, at my high school, I was in charge of doing the video announcements, and part of the morning video announcements is the Pledge of Allegiance. Right. So actually, I led the Pledge of Allegiance for about 2,000 students successfully for about 8 months, until we finally received a complaint because I was not an American, according to this specific teacher, and I was actually yanked from doing the Pledge of Allegiance after that.
That's so funny, too, because how one defines who is or who is not an American is so arbitrary. And because I say to people, well, are people over in American Samoa, are they Americans? You know, they've never even been to like the mainland, and they have so little in relationship. And in some ways, it seems like, yeah, again, it's very arbitrary. We actually are coming up on the next break, but we're speaking with Yael Osofsky. He's a reporter with Florida Watchdog and host of Liberty in Exile. And I'm posting it on Facebook page, his details. So stay with us. We've got more, plenty of interview to go. This is the Stateless Man on the Overseas Radio Network. Welcome back to the Stateless Man, pursuing liberty beyond borders. And I have one of my favorite guests. He's been on the show before. Yale Osofsky, an investigative reporter with Florida Watchdog and host of Liberty in Exile. If you want to get his website, please consider going to the Stateless Man Facebook page. That's just the Stateless Man on Facebook. His latest article, which I've used as the feature for this week, is titled The Fading Concept of Nationalism. And I can see it's getting a ton of traffic online. And I'll just want to give a quote here from one of the comments on the anarcho-capitalism thread of reddit.com. Excellent. Nationalism ranks next to racism as the most irrational collectivist philosophies. So, yeah, and plenty of reactions. Some people not so hot on the idea on the Facebook page, but we've got Yale here to explain it. And if you want to weigh in, you can email me, ferg@thestatelessman.com, or you can call in 1-888-741-7472. So, Yale, yeah, I mean, I've actually got one of the articles up here from a PA school district. Dropping charges against a student. They're going to charge a student for not saying the pledge. And this really reminds me of people over in, you know, Iran or somewhere where basically if you don't conform, you will be disavowed or displaced or not given respect. Now, but I want to sort of switch gears a little bit on this. Because there's far more to this article. You say that views are changing, and you actually, I'm very impressed. You drew up plenty of good research to make that claim that younger people are becoming more internationally minded and letting go of this. So do you want to just explain just what research you did manage to get and what it means in terms of the trend you've observed or collected?
What I started to look at is more how the younger generation, which you could call the millennials, people born in 80s and 90s and beyond, just sort of their view on the world and how their attachment is to the state. And there's a great Pew Research Center study that was done, I think, in November of 2011, just who interviewed these people and asked them, you know, are you patriotic, very patriotic, not very patriotic, you know, whereas their older generations were upwards in the 70%. Now for millennials, it's getting down to where it's almost in the 30% range. And then when you start asking them more about, you know, religious and cultural values, and if you use that to define yourself, if it's attached to the nation, you start going down to 40%. And then when you go down to, is the United States of America the greatest country of the world? Mm-hmm. Only 32% said yes. Now, it's not to say it's a good or a bad thing. It's only to say that there is a changing perception. The people are more optimistic about what the future holds because they're not tying their hopes and their beliefs and their happiness to the idea of a nation, to the patriotic myths that we're indoctrinated with from the time that we're young. And that this, I believe, is a very good thing. It's showing that people are starting to find other ways to define themselves. And I think in the end, a lot of people will find that's a much better alternative to nationalism.
Right. I think it is. I mean, one of the challenges, I think, to many people is that, you know, this, like, as you've noticed, it's just so entrenched from a young age. And it's very hard to let go of such a deeply held value. But the fact is that you didn't choose where you were born. And people aren't better because they're born in a certain location. It's just silly. And it's just as silly as racism, like as the person making the comment regarding your article stated. So I'm very glad that it's happening. And in the article, which you can read this article, The Fading Concept of Nationalism, on thestatelessman.com, so Yale also claims that there's basically a technological aspect to this that the subtitle, the part of the article where he refers to is titled Technology Makes You Free, and he refers to couch surfing and Airbnb. Now, I'm familiar with couch surfing, so we can discuss that as well, but what is Airbnb?
Airbnb is a great internet platform. It's very similar to couch surfing. It's people who just have homes, houses, who might have an extra room. They just go on the website, create an account, and they basically just rent out their room or their apartment for a short period of time. It's a way to go away from the big hotel chains and just to, I mean, there are plenty of houses and apartments in the world that are empty sometimes for a weekend if somebody takes a trip. So it's a way for people to become entrepreneurs and to become innkeepers of their own place and to offer it to travelers. And the prices are very good. And it also allows, just like Couchsurfing, for an experience. It allows you to interact with your host, to share cultural things that obviously you would never have if you were in a hotel. Everything is exactly the same in a hotel. That's sort of the point, to keep you comfortable.
You know, I was just thinking then, this discussion reminds me of when I heard a caller at a radio show down in Louisiana. He was, they speak about a lot of crazy things on this show, but he was discussing how he was struggling to find a fellow Caucasian lady because I guess the foreigners were taking them, and I guess he wanted a Caucasian. I was just thinking, mate, you are the one with the problem. You have to have an American Caucasian lady. Why don't you open your eyes to beyond that? And that's just like one instance where basically you are limiting by yourself. You're the loser from this ideology, and it's a way of bringing you into submission to the whims of certain people who control this nation or state. And so I really would like to hear some critics call in actually and challenge you, Yael, because I think what you've written is great. Let me have a look at one of the comments on the Facebook page, because someone did make a comment. I didn't quite understand it, and he said, "Excusing sovereignty betrays instincts of survival. Circle the wagons." Is that an American reference? Do you know what he's talking about?
I have no idea about that part.
Get it. The youth desiring some utopia formed by experience while traveling on mom and dad's money, defining the chasm and years between intellect and wisdom. I don't get that either.
I think just to defend my position, obviously he's probably referring to one part in the article where I'm talking about using couch surfing to travel across Europe. But of course, the fact that I'm using couch surfing shows that I'm not loaded. I don't have plenty of money. And when I did travel, I was there on a scholarship. I was there studying. I wasn't there just taking time off. Actually, I was completing my last semester of undergraduate education. So I think that's just some sort of resentment of, this is just the fancies of privileged white Americans who travel across the world on their parents' dimes and have weird experiences. I think that's
not the case.
Criticism.
That's a real myth that these travelers are wealthy people. It's the exact opposite. I meet so many people who are broke traveling. I'm thinking, how are you doing this? And I'm lining up a girl to write an article about how she spent 9 months through Latin America for $2,000. I mean, you can get by on very little traveling if you're smart and, yeah, using sites like couch surfing. But we've got just a few minutes to play with, and I want to get on to the sort of the final aspect, which I guess is why your article is getting plenty of attraction on Reddit in the anarcho-capitalism section, and that is that the final section is – wait a second. There's a conclusion after that, but you have a section, no need for government. And you say this new paradigm of technologically advanced – a technologically advanced borderless world serves as a direct challenge to nationalism and towards a new cosmopolitanism, and it breaks down the traditional power and authority and offers greater control to individuals. Let's examine that point, because that is powerful, Yael, and I hope people read this full article to get what you've put in here. What do you mean by it breaks down traditional power and authority?
I think for this particular claim, I'm drawing from another Pew Research Center survey that was done, I believe, in 2010, where they're talking to a lot of these global IT consultants and sort of asking them what they think about the growth of the internet. And one of the guys who's, you know, in the survey is saying, well, the internet is enabling a lot more people to come together and find that they're not just divided, you know, among nations. They're divided among their personal interests, their goals. People don't have allegiances that are just drawn in the nation and the flag anymore. It's more about things that are international concepts. I think a great example of this, with someone who's in the news right now, is Kim.com, who I believe right now is in exile in your old state of New Zealand.
Yeah. That guy is just an incredible story. I mean, I'm gonna have to do more research into him, but basically the US government is just on his tail. They are trying to get him deported. Well, you know, I'm not sure what the term is, but basically taken to the US to face charges.
Extradited.
That's right. And I will say the New Zealand government is not, the New Zealand police force, they've not exactly behaved in a moral manner in this regard or upstanding manner. They've been kind of supporting the US case, and they've confiscated or locked, frozen his assets without him being found guilty. So it's not an ideal case, but I admire this guy's courage to say, forget you, I'm going to continue being an entrepreneur. And and there's a quote from him basically about how the people who are going against him will see themselves in the dustpan of history, basically the ones who are getting in the way of progress. So I admire that guy. He's living beyond nationality.
That's definitely true. Another point that I sort of want to bring into this is that this is something that people who are in ruling authorities, people who are in bureaucracies and create reports, and there's a lot of other European Union reports I couldn't bring into this article, but they're introducing the internet as a challenge to their authority. They're saying if people are able to find different groups and communities, they're not going to be reliant upon us anymore. They can live and control themselves, and they become self-governing. And then what are we supposed to do? What is the government, the nation, supposed to do at that point in time?
Well, less. But I think that is great, and it brings together people who might not traditionally be allies. So more of the kind of, you could say, greeny environmentalist people who we're running out of time in this segment. So I just want to say thank you to Yale, because he's done great work on this article. Check it out on thestatelessman.com, and I look forward to being in touch with him. So Yale, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Fergus, and keep your experiment going, man. It's great.
Right on, I will do. So this is The Stateless Man, and we are on the Overseas Radio Network.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.